Hello.
Hello.
Oh, sorry that took me a while. I literally couldn't tear myself away from a jigsaw.
I've been stood up by jigsaws many, many times. This is a podcast in which two friends talk about the pleasures, absurdities, and imperfections of being human. I'm Simon Ellis.
And I'm Lee Miller. Welcome to Midlifing. How are you?
I'm good.
Where are you?
I'm at home.
Ah, yeah, England.
I'm standing up. That's why you can tell from it's. You can probably tell because of the because I'm in a recording studio. As in the study.
Yes, and I'm not in a recording studio, and you'll probably be able to hear how high my ceilings are.
Can I hear any dripping in there?
No, you can't.
It's all good.
It's all good. It's So, welcome to the occasional story of the humidity in Lee's flat. when we were here, when would it be? It would have been
you and me,
January. No, me and Bob.
Right.
When you and I were here, it was probably 100% humidity. When me and Bob were here over Christmas and into the new year, it was around about 90 to 85% humidity. It was really high.
You mean in really the flat high. Or in the city?
In the flat, inside the flat. Yeah, yeah. But
wow.
Yeah.
How do you measure that?
We have a dehumidifier that measures the humidity in the rooms.
It tells you.
Yeah, it tells you. It tells you just how horrifyingly high the humidity is.
And what is it now?
You know, 45.
And what's normal?
Well, the exterior humidity today was 53.
Right, so it's less humid in the house than it is outside.
It is, which is a massive turn up for the books.
That was one of the shocking, well, shocking's a little bit of an exaggeration, but that was one of the things that I was surprised about the UK was those in the winters, how the humidity stayed high. And it was a particular kind of insidious dampness.
Yeah.
That really just needs to be experienced to really get a feel for just how, well, gross it is.
It's one of those weird things where I never really fully understand why sheepskin jackets were so popular in the 70s. Because it must have just been like carrying around a wet pelt.
Yes, if you want to be, what is it, something man of fashion?
Dedicated follower of fashion.
Thank you.
Does it
well done.
Mean, do you think that the entire 70s just smelt of wet dog? Answers on a postcard.
I mean, I don't, I have some pretty strong memories of the 70s, but of course I wasn't in the United Kingdom.
No, you, well, I don't have it. Well, my memories of the 1970s are not strong. They are, they're quite flashbulby.
Yeah.
Things like, I remember the Silver Jubilee because my dad borrowed a candy floss machine.
Wow, that's that is news.
I mean, wow! Can you imagine? My dad was the coolest dad. Have I ever told you about the 1977 Silver Jubilee not street party?
Well, no, you haven't. But it did involve candy floss. You were, and so you were four.
I was four.
And you remember it?
I remember it vividly.
Do you know who won Wimbledon that year? The men's and women's.
Nope. Nope, don't know, don't care. But I do know that my dad borrowed a candy floss machine off Uncle Jack, Jack Crossley. You know, did you do this when you were a kid, call everybody uncle who wasn't your uncle?
No, that's just you.
It's just me. It's perhaps just a very northern thing.
Avid listeners will recognise your tendency to use the word uncle as in...
Funkle, shunkle.
Exactly.
Drunkle.
Oh, that was, oh, yeah.
I have been a drunkle. So I'm officially on holiday. I am on 2 weeks leave.
Wow. So have you just, does that mean you've sort of slowed down to doing one funding bid per week?
It means that I am only very, very gently monitoring emails, and only responding to those things which are effectively on fire.
Right.
And have been shouted at by anybody who I have responded to.
Have there been have there been any fires? So back to the street party. Virginia Wade, by the way, and Bjorn Borg.
Uh-huh. Ah, cool. Okay, so 1977, Silver Jubilee, our dear departed queen. I don't know why I said that.
Our dear departed queen.
I've just taken an imaginary
hat. So Silver's
off.
25, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it must have been. Yeah. 50.
Yeah. Me and Bob had our Silver wedding anniversary 2 years ago, and the same day that her mum was buried.
Oh, that's right.
which was a strange moment of watching. I think I've said watching Bob's auntie arrive to a funeral with a bottle of champagne and some balloons, and it was one of those like having to head her off at the pass, and she was going, I know that this isn't appropriate, but I'm worried I'll forget to give them to you. So put them in the car. It was not a. It was not a moment that was designed to be witnessed. Thankfully, it wasn't.
But also cinematic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Silver Jubilee. We wanted to, multiple people on the street wanted to have a street party. We lived on a cul-de-sac, so if there was no through traffic, this would have been an absolute treat to have a street party because, you know, there will be no cordoning off of roads. Would have been super easy.
I hope the story doesn't end with the words health and safety.
No, okay, it ends with aspirational middle class neighbours who said that a street party was common and they didn't want to have anything to do with it.
I would have preferred health and safety.
Yeah. So my mum and dad, who are many things, but aspirationally middle class, ain't one of them, talked to the neighbours on the other side and our neighbours next door, but one, and we had really big gardens, and they all agreed that it would just take out the fence panels, and so we had access to these three big gardens, and instead of
at
it being a street party, it was a massive back garden party.
Wow.
I don't know that I did feel sorry, but upon reflection, I felt sorry for the kids who were on the other side of me. Simon and Paul, shout out if you're listening.
Yeah.
They were just kind of looking over
the
fence.
You should send them this episode. Like, you mean on the other side of the street, they didn't get to go to your backyard?
No, the people on the other side of the street just crossed the road. No, it was the people on the other side of the fence who didn't want to have the party because it was too common. Their kids were just like looking over all this like jollity. Oh, and my dad borrowed a candy floss machine, except my dad said, I'm not going to pay extra money for that stupid bloody pink sugar. So we had white candy floss.
So candy floss is just sugar, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just sugar, but you get dyed pink sugar and that's what turns it pink. And my dad was like, I'm not spending extra money on pink sugar. You can have white candy floss.
Sure, I get that. But how does it get to be the way it is?
Okay, so I don't know the full. I'm gonna say I don't know the full mechanics, but there is something to do with. It's like a tray with a central column.
Yes.
And
spinning.
You pour the sugar in down the column, and it heats up. But there's also a fan as well, so it sort of spits out molten sugar, and then you move a stick through the molten sugar and sort of twirl it around, and then it turns into strands.
Wow, and when was the last time you had some candy floss? What do they call it in America? Can you remember it's called?
Cotton candy. I think if you're an American. The last time I had candy floss, I don't know. Probably the last time I went to Blackpool Pleasure Beach, which would have been, I don't know, 25, 30
Blackpool
years ago.
Pleasure Beach.
Not necessarily.
And what did you do there?
I had
candy floss.
Have you ever been to Blackpool Pleasure Beach?
No, but I would totally have candy floss. I actually don't think I could handle candy floss. I think candy floss might be a bridge too far for my middle-aged set of teeth.
Yeah, you don't have to chew it. You can just like pop it in your mouth. And
it just hardens, doesn't it?
Oh, it's kind of, yeah.
You pop it in your mouth and it just hardens.
Yes. Oh, God, Simon.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I just can't help but think about show titles.
I also just want to say that if you're popping it in your mouth in order to make it harden, you really should have been doing a bit of work before then. If that's your final line of defense.
Yes. Yes, it's Welcome to Homoerotica by Lee and Simon.
We've run the gamut. Candy floss, humidity, and...
You're basically just shoving... No, you're...
Stop it.
You're hurling show titles at me. I'm having to dodge them right now. Mm. But we've got to have a show before we have a show title.
Okay, so do you have a topic for us?
Oh!
Is it AI?
Asshole.
Simon shared one of the most interesting conversations that I've witnessed to, and genuinely, can people access it?
Yeah, eventually. It'll be on YouTube.
Okay, link in the show notes eventually, but it was what a brilliant conversation you had, the two of you.
Yeah, it's very nice of you to say that. I don't believe you.
Okay, you don't have to. But, you know, you can test me later and that'll prove that I was listening.
I did do
you
quite a lot.
You talked about Newtonian physics and the idea of the levers of the body. There you go. See? Ah. And that was when I was on a bus.
Were you listening? Did you have headphones on?
Yeah, we did. We were only on the bus for about 5 minutes because we'd mistimed. We haven't mistimed. We'd gone out for lunch and we both agreed we were very interested in listening to the conversation, but not so interested that we would rush our second margarita. So we just took it easy.
No wonder it was a really great conversation if you'd... you were asleep by the midpoint.
So topics.
I do have a topic. I have... Okay. They're both about new business ideas.
Okay.
So... The first one, today, I learned, well, it's actually, I've been gazumped.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Today, I learned that there's some startup here in Coventry is doing a bit of home baking and shoving their loaves all over the place. What the?
Oh, no.
Can you believe it? They stole my idea.
They stole your idea to
of
mix
having
water
and
flour
sell it.
And then they heat it. How could they?
I have to rethink my business plan because I was basically going to have a I cornered the market, but someone else has cornered it, so I'm going to have to just make better bread.
Yeah,
or firebomb their premises.
I think probably option number one is better, both in terms of life.
Yeah,
I don't think firebombing premises is ever good.
No, it's a little strong because I haven't even tasted it as well. I'm gonna try some. Exactly.
Have you been drinking, Simon?
No, I haven't. No.
Oh, how disappointing!
Not a drop. No.
Oh wow!
That's just how I talk.
I'm on
normally.
Holiday, so you know.
I'm gonna have to try some, see what it's like. Okay. But the other thing that happened is that I've been in Italy.
I know that.
And one of the things that strikes me, and I'm not sure I'm the first, I suspect I'm not the first person, is that it's extraordinarily unfinished for a very old place. It's... It doesn't matter where you go. There are always things that aren't finished. And... I realize that it's actually quite something in a way that and I don't know, and I suspect that there are a lot of things which just stop. And then, so it's a really curious experience to be in a place, for example, in Syracuse, where there's a archaeological park, 5 BC, you know, there's thousands of years people have been lugging rocks in and out of this place and making shapes, with these, I mean, it's extraordinary. And yet, thousands of years later, there's still this this incredible presence. I noticed two things throughout Italy that I think I need to start selling because they would be, you would just make a killing in that country. And one of them is those, maybe you know them, they're basically big strips of orange plastic with holes in them.
Oh, yes, I know exactly what you mean.
And in Italy, they seem to just put them around things. It doesn't matter, like, if you could, I think I could just put a chair in the middle of the road and put some of that plastic around it, and people would know that there's some construction going on there, and that construction might be going on, been going on for years and years, and nobody would worry about it. It's quite, and so I thought I might just buy, get a shop that sells that. And the other thing is that red and white tape. And I think if I just sold those two things that, I don't know how to express it, but it's a little bit like you can put it around anything. It's like a ready-made. It's a ready half-made. So I could make it both. I could make both a killing and an art project out of it. Eat your heart out, Marcel Duchamp. Of course I'm being silly, but there is something about, I don't think it's like that anywhere else I've been. Is it like that in Portugal?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is just about poverty, do you think, or poorness?
It's interesting. I was walking down what I lovingly refer to as the High Street, which is not called the High Street. It's called Chumoreisreish. It's the main road that I live off. But, you know, it's like if I say to Bob, do you want to walk down the High Street? She knows where I'm heading.
Yeah.
And just around about, it was last year, so not so this would be 2021 into 2022, not 22 into 23. There was a big hole in the pavement around about Christmas time, and nothing was being done about it. And clearly people were getting increasingly pissed off about falling into the hole, until eventually somebody stuffed an artificial Christmas tree in the middle of it with lights on, with battery-powered lights, so that people wouldn't fall down it. And it stayed there for about a day and a half, and then all of a sudden there was tape around it, and then work started to happen. Because I think the good people of who run the Fregosia, the area that we live in, were just like, oh, shit, yeah. Probably should do something about that massive. I was thinking about this idea of poverty. And I was actually thinking about it today, that I was driving past a flat. I was on a bus, and it's at the bottom of our road. Not quite the bottom of our road, but, you know, it's. I was on a bus into town, and I was not far away from here. And there's a flat next to a convent, and the convent is in quite a lot of disrepair, and it makes me really angry at the Roman Catholic Church, because there are still very, very elderly nuns living there, and they seem to be perfectly happy just leaving them to sort of gently rot in these terrible accommodations, whereas, you know, the Pope gets to live in palaces. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. It's not my business, really. And that was not the thing that struck me. So there's this block of flats. It's not a block of flats. It's an old offshoot of the convent, has been turned into fancy flats. The cheapest is £800,000. The most expensive is £2 million. So,
wow,
quite expensive. And directly across the road, there's the docks, and underneath the bridge, outside of the docks, there was about 12 tents of rough sleepers, and I was just caught by the stark difference, and how shit we are as a people, as a humanity, to be able to, like, you know, think that it's okay for somebody to live in a £2 million flat. What's that noise? Oh, it's nothing. It's because I've not got my noise cancelling on. And I realised that I had the ambient sound on my headphones working, and so everything's really loud. And I was thinking, why is Bob making so much noise? Then when I took my headphones out, she isn't. It's just everything sounds like... it's like having bionic ears. Anyway. So I was reflecting on why we so shit at taking care of one another. Why, you know, then I was also then thinking about, oh, when I talk to Simon today, maybe I'll say, mate, you're right about inherited wealth. That's shit, isn't it? And then realising that, you know, it'll still just end up not going to the right people. There'll still be people living underneath bridges because we're just awful. And that also made me start to think about the notion of poverty. And I think your eyes become inured to the poverty that you encounter on a daily basis so that you just don't see it. And so I think there is a sense that when you are sort of relocated, you see poverty and you go, oh, this is worse here. And actually, it's not that it's worse. It's just that it's articulated in a different way. So I noticed it a lot when I was traveling from the southwest to the northwest, and even in the UK, you know, it's not that there's no poverty in the southwest. It's just it looks different than it does in the northwest.
So you'd effectively adapted or got used to it. So yeah. So you did that thing which we do, which is to invisibilize that which we don't really want to be looking at.
Absolutely.
Do you think that because do you think there's something about, I mean, it's a little bit, it seems to me it's a little bit like the our experience of time during the pandemic, which is that because nothing was changing, time seemed to go, when you look back on it, it seemed as if it just, like, nothing happened in that time. Yeah. Like, it was, it's like there's the period before, and then there's the pandemic time, and then after. And that there's something, it was something about the lack of, the relative lack of novelty in our days. And so, so that you, in order to kind of keep seeing things, we need novelty.
I think, I think there is something to that. And I think also what we're talking about here is a particular type of privilege. And I think I'm not thinking of it directly in relationship to poverty, although I think it totally, you know, obviously maps there. But I was just thinking about the idea of the pandemic and the idea of being caught in the same day over and over and over and over and over again is a narrative that we have told ourselves. And it's important, I think, to reflect on the fact that the people who are writing about that are journalists and you know, think piece writers and creatives.
High.
Exactly. If you go and talk to somebody who worked in the NHS, or if you go and work to somebody who was...
Their work was effectively normal or hyper-normal.
Oh, hyper-normal, I would imagine. Because certainly in the NHS, you were just watching death at a horrifying scale. And if you're working in any kind of a service industry that was remaining open, not obviously catering and things like that, which were, of course, decimated, instead you were in that position of encountering probably the worst of people's behaviours because they wanted to come into a shop and not wear a mask, or they couldn't understand why three people couldn't come in when two people. And it's like, and I know, you know, it. So I suspect that that period didn't feel novel at all, didn't feel repetitious at all. I suspect it felt horrifyingly novel.
Yes, I was reminded that because the experience I had in the NHS was in a cancer ward, and they said that they were their lives had been normal, effectively, that they hadn't, there would be no change in their routine. So they were just, they'd been, you know, so it wasn't like, you know, on emergency wards where all things were infectious diseases or et cetera. But do you think then that you see it as your responsibility, or that we meaning human beings, we should somehow betray or work against that, I'm going to call it sort of shorthand, and by that I mean because there's so much going on in people's lives that we can't take it all in. And there's a particular shorthand which happens, which is, for example, in the description of the people writing think pieces during the pandemic, etc., that there's something pragmatic and frustrating and sort of abhorrent about the we. Well, who is the we in this having these days that are the same and there's no novelty? But are you suggesting that you feel like it should be our responsibility to keep seeing things with fresh eyes, to avoid the us-ing and them-ing?
Yeah, I think my immediate response is absolutely, but I think the truer and more honest response, as in do I do that, is that no, I don't. But the should and do are two separate things. midlifing has become almost one long, sustained shrug.
Welcome to next week's shrug. Yes, and it's the podcast for with a gesture that you can't see.
And it is, you know, it is frustrating because, but I think in this instance, it feels sort of important for two relatively successful men who have been lucky to acknowledge that the world is complicated and shit, and we're not just sitting in a place of patriarchal satisfaction and going, yeah, but it's all right for us, so we don't really need to worry about it. Can we fix it? No. Can we carry on having a conversation about it? Yes, I think we can. And should we do more work? Yeah, probably.
I watched a film last night called The Swimmers, or The Swimmers, and it's a Netflix film, and it's about two Syrian women who get out of Damascus and cross the sea on a tiny little raft with a massive group of people, and they happen to be swimmers. One of them in particular was the younger one was a stronger swimmer, though both strong swimmers, and they at one point in the voyage, in this trip to Lesbos, they got out and started towing the boat. They were swimming in the, I guess it's the Mediterranean, or maybe it's the Adriatic. I'm never quite sure about that part of the world. And one of them, they eventually make it. And I spent a lot of the film in tears. It's, you know, it's a sort of a heart wrench. It's a, what do you call it? You know, it's a film designed to
it's a tearjerker.
A tearjerker. That was something about violins was in my mind. But yeah, it's a bit of it's designed to do that in terms of the way in which it's pushing your emotions. But I spent most of the film thinking about just this thing we're talking about, which is our capacity to look away, to not see. And I who the hours there. I'm just going to say my capacity to look away. And it was really incredibly extraordinary story. And of course it is a true story in the sense that this younger of the two, they made it to Germany and she ended up going to the Rio Olympics and swimming for the refugees that they made. Remember them in that time, they made a sort of Olympic team for, and she also swam in Tokyo, which must've been during the pandemic. But there's something about, I read recently, and I'm just not going to quite get it right, but it's that it's effectively anyone that puts their children into that water knows deep down how unsafe the land is that they're on. It's so striking, and I think it's, I guess I'm saying this because it's something about the attitude to those, the unseen, in any culture or any society, is so revealing.